You're listening to From the Archives, an NHPR production. I'm Eric Larrabee. We've been listening back to a 1989 report on the state of mental health care in New Hampshire. Last week, reporter Kathy McLaughlin explored the living conditions in the old New Hampshire hospital buildings, which could be crowded and grim. This week, we share part two of that report. NHPR's Martin Murray spoke with Paul Gorman, superintendent of New Hampshire Hospital. Gorman explained how the hospital's new, community-oriented facility sought to treat patients.
Our goal is always to try and help people so that they can live and work and function in the least restrictive environment.
While 1989 was a high point for New Hampshire's mental health care, the story has taken a few twists and turns since then. I spoke with NHPR's current health and science reporter, Jack Rodolico, to find out what's changed.
So we had sort of defunding by the state legislature over the course of a couple decades, to the point where a group called the Disability Rights Center sued the state and said, you know, you're violating the civil rights of people with mental illness because by not providing community services, you're essentially forcing them into institutions.
Stay tuned after the story for more of my conversation with Jack Rodolico. But first, from the archives this week, part two of NHPR's 1989 report on New Hampshire's mental health services.
A visitor may be forgiven if, upon entering the state's new acute psychiatric services center, he or she is confused. It doesn't appear, as one might imagine, a hospital for the severely mentally ill to be. Some patients are in the lobby, visiting the beauty salon, passing the time of day with friends, or standing in line waiting to make a transaction at the center's bank. Such features are prominent throughout the center: a greenhouse, fitness center, library. An attempt to combine treatment facilities with an atmosphere of community. The $28 million center, located on the grounds of the state hospital in Concord, is the pride of New Hampshire's mental health system. But it's the last stop, not the first. It's reserved for those who suffer the most severe symptoms of mental illness.
We have continuing care units in the hospital for these people.
Hospital Superintendent Paul Gorman.
Some of them may stay here for a year, 2 years, some up as far as 5 years, until we're able to work with them in such a way that they get some control over the symptoms of their mental illness such that they're able to go back to the community. Our goal is always to try and help people so that they can live and work and function in the least restrictive environment.
The center is a culmination of sorts in the never-ending search for the best therapy, for the most efficient treatment. But a more critical crossroads was reached years earlier: deinstitutionalization, the emptying of the warehouses, as some of the country's hospitals were called, as patients re-entered the community, sharing apartments and homes, being treated at private, nonprofit centers spread around the state.
Over a period of time, as the process of downsizing of the state hospital continued, the resources were shifted away from the hospital and into the community, so that there are now approximately 650 beds in group homes and supervised apartments, in independent living situations that are managed by the community mental health centers throughout the state, that give our severely mentally ill people a place to live that is dignified and proper in the community.
Today, the vast majority of New Hampshire's mentally ill are treated not at the state hospital, but at the 10 community mental health centers. And Gorman says careful planning has provided assurance that that treatment is adequate. Homelessness among the mentally ill, he says, is not a serious problem in the state. Is the present treatment process now working? Gorman says it is. Advances in medication in the 40s was a key to controlling symptoms, he says, but the institutions continue to dull minds. The brick walls simply contained, staff simply provided necessary care. Gorman came to his present position from one of the community centers. He says the new programs and living arrangements contribute to a more humane environment.
The ability of these particular patients to hold down jobs, to have a life like we all take so much for granted, have friends, have supports, have recreation, have specific times in their lives for functions, that kind of thing gets very controlled in an institutional setting. Just the freedom of choices that people have in a community setting is dramatically different.
A difference is evident, too, inside the new hospital. Two-thirds of those admitted spend less than 3 weeks there. The emphasis now is not on caregiving, but on treatment. And that, says Gorman, has made a world of difference.
I think that makes the staff person themselves, whether it's a mental health worker or a nurse, feel more valued because the contribution that they're making to the patient is structured within an organized treatment plan that's individualized for every patient in the hospital. What their contribution, that is the staff person's contribution to that, is clear. And it's that active treatment modality that we're involved in now that is different from the more passive caretaking role that staff had several years ago.
There's been other changes as well in New Hampshire's approach to the treatment of the mentally ill. In 1984, there was a proposal to get out of the business altogether and contract the care out to private hospitals. That didn't happen, but the state has entered into an agreement with Dartmouth Medical School to provide psychiatric services. This public-private partnership is pointed to as a keystone, Gorman says, to the future of New Hampshire's mental health services, assuring care that the state alone could not, and placing increased emphasis on education and research.
That was Martin Murray speaking with Paul Gorman, then superintendent of New Hampshire Hospital, in 1989. This is Eric Larrabee for From the Archives, and I'm pleased now to be joined by NHPR health and science reporter Jack Rodolico. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
It's been over 25 years since those stories were produced. What about them caught your attention?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the late 80s is, you know, now sort of considered the golden age in mental health treatment in New Hampshire, in that, you know, we had this sort of enlightened period where we realized, you know, people had a right to be treated in a way that was more humane. They didn't have to be in institutions. They had a right to live in communities. And so that is, I hear people that work in the mental health field talk about that time period all the time. Almost every time I do an interview, that comes up. The sort of counterpart to that now, the other thing that really stood out to me was there was a quote in there that said that, you know, homelessness among individuals with mental illness was not a problem back then. And that was supposed to be seen as evidence of we had a system that was functioning well. We have the polar opposite problem now because things have been defunded over the years. You know, something like 40% of the people in New Hampshire who are homeless self-report having a severe mental illness. Something like 30% are alcoholics or drug addicts, which is truly also considered a mental illness. So, you know, we've come a long way since the late 80s.
So like you said, at the time in 1989, New Hampshire was viewed as one of the top states in the country in terms of mental health services. So what do you think has been the biggest change since then? Is it the inconsistent funding?
The drop in funding has been pretty dramatic over that time period. And again, like, you know, if homeless people are sort of the canary in the coal mine, they're a pretty clear indication that, you know, we don't have enough places for people with mental illness to live out their lives in a way that is healthy for them.
With the question of funding issues, now last year there's been a settlement of a class action lawsuit against the state, and the state settled for $30 million to improve mental health services. So where's that $30 million coming from? And can you tell us just a little bit about that settlement and the other mental health reports that you're working on?
Sure. So, you know, essentially to sort of close the loop on these stories, right? So we had sort of defunding by the state legislature over the course of a couple decades to the point where a group called the Disability Rights Center sued the state and said, you know, you're violating the civil rights of people with mental illness because by not providing community services, you're essentially forcing them into institutions. And the Department of Justice jumped on that lawsuit and the state decided to settle. The legislature is now appropriating money to beef up community services, the goal being that hopefully people just don't wind up in hospitals unless they absolutely need to, whereas now hospitals are sort of the front line. If you don't have enough therapists and emergency services right in town, whether it's in Concord or in Laconia or any other part of the state, those people will wind up in an emergency room and then in the state hospital. So the goal is for the legislature to fund that $30 million over the course of 4 years. And so, I mean, it's an interesting time. I guess what I'm going to be looking at is how good a job the state does in implementing this settlement. You know, the people that sued the state seem to think we're doing an okay job so far. There's a lot of honest efforts, but it is a gargantuan undertaking. It's essentially an entire revamp of the state's mental health system. So, you know, I think I'm going to be watching that pretty closely over the next year or two.
Okay, that's NHPR health and science reporter Jack Rodolico. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
NHPR's From the Archives podcast unearths a new story every week from the station's audio library. Join us next week when we'll replay reporter Robbie Honig's 1989 visit to an old-fashioned letterpress shop in Ashuelot, New Hampshire.
In this particular case, I'm making a certain quantity of each letter as a font so that I can use them for corrections.
For more, check out our blog at nhpr.org.